Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the first day of August, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Call, and let's try to recap another week where insanity, in America with a K, seems to have replaced the law of the land. But maybe it'll be helpful to start with some, well, if not good news, at least revealing news to set the stage. These are some things that came out between Thursday and Friday, like the fact that Ghislaine Maxwell and the infamous Epstein documents, at least some of them, have finally been unsealed. As you might expect, there are a number of summaries out there, but one of them, from Christine Layla at the Gateway Pundit, says that Bill Clinton was, in fact, we knew that anyway, on Epstein Island with Jeffrey Epstein, Maxwell, and, quote, two young girls from New York. And the released information includes portions of interviews with witnesses. The one that mentioned the two young girls from New York was asked, were sexual orgies a regular occurrence on the island at Jeffrey's house? To which the answer was, yes. Mike Cernovich compiled a list of various men whom Ghislaine Maxwell directed Virginia Jeffrey, you'll also see her described as Virginia Roberts, to engage in activities with, according to her deposition. And they include Alan Dershowitz, Glenn Dubin, Stephen Kaufman, Prince Andrew, Jean-Luc Brunel, Bill Richardson, Marvin Minsky, and a whole bunch of other names, many of them still redacted. Christina Layla reminds us that TGP reported back in 2016, before the election, that Bill Clinton was among those who took numerous trips on Epstein's infamous Lolita Express to his private orgy island, where underage girls as young as 14 were prostituted for Epstein's rich and famous clients, including but not limited to the likes of Clinton, Kevin Spacey, and Prince Andrew. Zero Hedge's summary says that dozens of exhibits related to Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein were unsealed Thursday evening, providing a lot of insight into various allegations against the financier and his purported madam, as well as high-profile individuals, including, but not limited to, Bill Clinton, the aforementioned Alan Dershowitz, and several other people whose names have been, as we've said, redacted, but there's no shortage of speculation on the Internet. The documents are related to a 2015 civil defamation lawsuit against Maxwell by one of the many accusers, Virginia Jeffrey, and they were ordered to be released back on July 23rd by U.S. District Judge Loretta Preska, and they also included flight logs from Epstein's various private jets, as well as police reports from the multiple locations where Epstein maintained residences. Among the findings, and we've already mentioned the first one, that Bill Clinton was, in fact, on the pedo island with two young girls, various sordid details from the alleged sexual encounters, and this little tidbit, Virginia Jeffrey appealed to the Comey FBI, for what that was worth, obviously nothing, asking for evidence that was in their possession, seized from Epstein, for that civil case she was pursuing, and was, no surprise, ignored. Hey, they do it with the entire Constitution, so why not? Other you-don't-say findings include the fact that Maxwell was in communication with Jeffrey Epstein in January of 2015, contradicting her claim she hadn't been in touch with the guy for more than a decade. You know what? I can't help but be more curious if she's been in contact with him since his alleged suicide. Alan Dershowitz was mentioned a number of times, and he has in fact gone to great lengths to defend himself, suggesting on multiple occasions that this very document release, which doesn't seem to have done what he said, would exonerate him. This, by the way, is the guy that wants to stick a needle in your arm. I can't help but think maybe it'd be a good thing if the American court system would prosecute and then do the same thing to him. Among some of the other prominent Dershowitz-associated names revealed in the unsealed documents, former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, and some others we've already talked about, with one notable exception. The evidence does suggest, says Zero Hedge's summary, that even with some names redacted, Donald Trump is in the clear. So it'll no doubt be interesting to pay attention and see how this is spun. Here's another corruption and high places-related story, but it's actually good news. The chief prosecutor and circuit attorney for St. Louis, the Soros-funded Kimberly Gardner, lost a major legal battle earlier this week after a judge blocked her attempt to conceal documents that she's been concealing for years now that may reveal the nefarious measures she took to baselessly harass and incriminate former Missouri Governor Eric Greitens. Marking the end of a nearly 2.5-year morass of litigation, St. Louis Circuit Judge Christopher McGraw warned that Gardner's office is, quote, reckless and dilatory for failing to respond to a lawsuit alleging violation of Missouri's version of the Sunshine Law. They call it the Open Records Law. And as the Gateway Pundit, which is reporting on this, had previously noted, Gardner, a George Soros-funded prosecutor, is under active criminal investigation for her alleged illegal efforts to prosecute Ridens back in 2018, an endeavor that led to the rising Republican star's resignation. And all of this has come about because in July 2019, award-winning investigative journalist and founder of the publication Just the News, John Solomon, submitted a Sunshine Law request to obtain and publicly disclose all communications between Gardner, her staff, and associates. And basically, since Gardner has consistently refused to comply, she's been violating that law as well. Gee, folks, you'd have thought by now she'd have talked to other leftists and learned about Bleach Bit. By the way, this is the same Soros-tainted Kimberly Gardner who is, in fact, still attempting to railroad Mark and Patricia McCloskey, the pair of St. Louis lawyers, for defending their home against violent rioters that may well have decided to kill them using firearms. And along the way, her office countenanced evidence tampering with at least one of those firearms in a transparent attempt to inflate the charges. Here next, a story that would be funnier if it got more actual coverage. When pressed during a recent CBS interview with Nora O'Donnell, says the summary from Ethan Huff at Natural News, about the fact that nearly every test patient given the experimental Wuhan coronavirus vaccine thus far has developed systemic side effects, billionaire eugenicist Bill Gates was nervously unconcerned. He hemmed and hawed and then reassured viewers that the FDA will, quote, do a good job at that, unquote. You know what? That almost makes it sound like a good politician is one that stays bought. Right, Bill? As O'Donnell explained, a whopping 80% of those given at least two doses of Moderna's test vaccine for the Wuhan flu got sick, and in many cases with the same symptoms one might develop from the infection itself. But according to Gates, it's nothing to worry about because the side effects really aren't that bad. Of course, he won't tell you. For the most part, neither is the disease it's supposed to protect against. And if you think about it, folks, most people die of comorbidity factors, meaning the side effects are just enough to kill you if you're already sick. Oh, and he also admitted they may have to poke you over and over and maybe over again, too. Which leads me to observe there's a whole lot of other things we really need to talk about, starting with the literally unprecedented level of information warfare that's going on against not just Americans, but people worldwide, and how they are being subjected to what's arguably the greatest scientific fraud and the associated tyrannical government pogrom in human history. And obviously, I'm talking about the COVID-1984 pandemic, which has now been able to accomplish what the non-existent man-made global warming fraud was unable to. i.e. a global economic reset, an almost complete meltdown of the world's energy usage, primarily for things like travel and manufacturing. But food shortages and issues like keeping people warm will undoubtedly come to the fore when summer's over and temperatures in the northern hemisphere begin to cool down. Meanwhile, of course, the big concern is to keep people properly panicked, preconditioned for the big payoff, the vaccine, and wearing their masks, you know, their petri dish rebreathers, like good little slaves. The economic war, of course, continues, and may in fact, folks, be already lost. We'll get there in a bit. But it's the information war that I want to focus on up front today. And since that terminology is obviously prescient, let's go to Infowars.com for their story about America's frontline doctors, you know, the white coats, who held another white coat conference in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday after the gathering Monday made national headlines and was heavily censored by Big Brother's public-private partner, Big Tech. And this kind of shows you why Big Tech is interested in AI so much, because they were a little bit slow on the uptake. Monday's press conference was seen over 17 million times before two Facebook, Twitter, and Gulag started to delete uploads of the event. And as you heard yesterday, both President Trump and his son Donald Jr. both tweeted the video, and Twitter then deleted not only the president's post, and that's the first time they've actually been so in your faces to do that, and suspended Don Jr.'s account. But in an attempt to show the socialist media conglomerates that they won't be silenced, the group spoke again on the front steps of the Supreme Court on Tuesday. Meanwhile, though, socialist media continues to drop the hammer and really up the ante to try to make sure Americans are ignorant of what they're planning to do to them. One of the primary movers and shakers, Dr. Stella Emanuel, had her personal two Facebook page shut down, and the website, AmericasFrontlineDoctors.com, was removed by their traitorous website host, Squarespace. And the list of coordinated bannings and information hiding just keeps on a-coming. Steve Watson at InfoWars says Twitter continued to crack down on anyone daring to share that viral video of a group of doctors touting hydroxychloroquine as a cure for COVID-19 on Tuesday. They removed a tweet containing a link to the video by Breitbart News and then locked that outlet's account. And this, folks, I can't blame you if you don't even want to believe we've come this far. Breitbart announced that the video of America's frontline doctors was removed from Twitter with the justification that that literally satanic platform says that, quote, tweets with the video are in violation of our COVID-19, they didn't spell it right, of course, it's 1984, misinformation policy. Now, the irony is, they're correct. They have a policy of only allowing misinformation and hiding anything truthful. But hey, that's where we are today. Breitbart said that footage of the live stream on Periscope, Twitter's live streaming platform, had generated 1 million views before being removed by the site. And the outlet added that the same footage on Facebook had accumulated over 17 million views within just 8 hours and had 185,000 concurrent viewers at the time it was being streamed. On YouTube, a clip from the event received 80,000 views before being removed by the platform for violating their so-called community guidelines.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Why don't they just call it what it is? Fascism are us, and we refuse to allow any truth to actually be revealed. Octung. And along with the president and his son, Breitbart then found that their Twitter account had been limited as a punishment for violating their policy about telling the truth when it comes to the biggest scientific fraud in human history. Oh, and here, folks, a quick aside. Your host has mentioned this before, but there's a reason why yours truly is not to be found on Two Facebook or Twitter. There's just no point in participating with evil. Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit tells us that Vimeo too took down the videos and noted that after the censorship extravaganza, which in fact, folks, would have made Joseph Goebbels proud, Dr. Stella Emanuel said, "We need your help. We're being attacked, ridiculed, and discredited. We need our patients to speak up. If you've been cured by hydroxychloroquine, share your story online using this hashtag, HCQWorks." No doubt they'll soon ban that too. Dr. Rupali Chadha put it this way, "My friend and physician colleague at Stella Emanuel has had her Facebook page shut down. Censorship of your doctors is alive and well in Cuba. Oops, I mean America." He should have spelled it with a K, though. While it's still available, some places at least, the Gateway Pundit reminds us that AmericasFrontlineDoctors.com says, quote, "If Americans continue to let so-called experts and media personalities make their decisions, the great American experiment of a constitutional republic with representative democracy will cease." Christina Leyla, also for TGP, says that Dr. Stella Emanuel bravely came out on Monday and said she's personally treated over 350 patients suffering from COVID-19 with a combination of hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and Zithromax, and all of them have recovered. And she even disclosed that she put herself and her staff on hydroxychloroquine as a preventative, saying, quote, "Americans don't have to die. America, there is a cure for COVID. You don't need a mask. There is a cure." And of course, others of us have pointed out that even the doctors don't necessarily go as far as they perhaps should in emphasizing the vital importance of keeping your immune system strong by not eating bad things and taking all the required supplements that will help it fight off infections, including this one. Now, folks, I really couldn't do a sequence like this justice without pointing out some of the crap that members of the far-left waste-stream media, including, in this case, the UK's Daily Mail, are pushing. And it's subtle and deceptive, and you do have to admit, even displays a certain twisted brilliance in how they spin it. In their infamous clickbait on the right-hand side of the page, they'll take you to Female Today, where they also note that it's Madonna who supports COVID-19 conspiracy theory video, as they so quaintly put it in their headline, after it was removed by social media platforms, and she even supports the doctor who made the bizarre claims. Now listen to the subheadings here. A video of America's frontline doctors went viral on Monday. The video showed a group of doctors claiming the malaria drug hydroxychloroquine was a, and they put it in quotes, cure and preventative measure for COVID-19. And after being shared by, ooh, all the people you love to hate, President Trump, the video was removed, they tout, from Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube for, and they put it in quotes because they want to emphasize it, false claims. But Madonna, they say, shared the video on Tuesday and claimed that, and they put this in quotes too, "people are hiding a cure for the virus." And in the caption, she called Dr. Stella Emanuel her hero. And among other bizarre claims, says the UK's Daily Mail, that Emanuel made, she supported hydroxychloroquine, said face masks were not needed. Oh, how dare she say that?
I've never had pains like this before. Oh, this is the worst one I ever had. Oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. I'm dying.
Why, next thing you know, she'll be saying we don't have to get on our knees and worship Baal. And she made a whole bunch of other bizarre claims, says the clearly racist Daily Mail. Now, why do I say that? Because the picture shows that Dr. Stella Emanuel is black. And as you've no doubt noticed, in the politically correct modern world, any criticism of any person of color is bigoted and racist. Well, there is, of course, the exception. That is, unless they're telling you the truth or defending the rule of law. And since we're here, let's let the real propaganda roll. Says the Daily Mail, Madonna twice posted a video of doctors supporting the malaria drug hydroxychloroquine as a, here it comes, in quotes, cure for the novel coronavirus after it was retweeted by President Trump. See, she deserved to be ridiculed. Before being removed for misinformation by Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, the pop star seemed to ignore the warnings of falsehoods in the video and was slammed by fans on Tuesday. And it says, Madonna, age 61, showed support, who could have imagined it, for the doctors shown in the video, including the infamous Dr. Stella Maxwell, who, they tell us, has a history of believing in satanic plots, and that endometriosis is caused by sex demons, among other outlandish claims. Full stop. Have you ever noticed how they're not even remotely this hard on real criminals, from Comey and McCabe to Hillary Clinton, who's married to a sex demon, at least on paper, and has been widely documented, except by the Daily Mail and the New York Times and the WAPO and CNN and the like, to participate in those satanic rituals? Madonna dared to share the videos of doctors describing the malaria drug as a, here it comes again, quote, cure for COVID-19 to her 15.4 million followers, saying the truth will set us all free. But some people don't want to hear the truth. And that at least seems pretty obvious. She got that one right. But the Daily Mail doesn't put the rest of the tweet in the body of their story. They did at least include it as an insert, but I'm going to read the rest of it too, because there's a whole different slant in here they obviously don't want to emphasize in this particular twisting. Talking about those people who don't want to hear the truth, she continues, especially the people in power who stand to make money from this long, drawn-out search for a vaccine, which, she says, has been proven and has been available for months. They would rather let fear control them and let the rich get richer and the poor get sicker. This woman is my hero. Thank you, Stella Emanuel. Did you catch it? Yeah, Madonna is on board with the vaccine as the Holy Grail. It's just that they've already got it, which may or may not be true. It's certainly no less obscene than that they would foist an untested vaccine, which is all you can do in a period of a few months, on literally hundreds of millions of people. But hey, any way you slice it, the bottom line is, yeah, they're evil, and they don't care if we know about it. Which opens a whole Pandora's box that the Daily Mail isn't about to touch with a 10-foot pole. The point here is obvious. It's to ridicule anybody who dares to point out that the emperor not only has no clothes, he's forcing you to get naked too. But Instagram say the gatekeepers included a false information warning before the video could be viewed on her channel, adding that it was reviewed by independent fact-checkers. Achtung! What do you bet the Nazi SS would have said something very similar? And finally, as if to make it very clear where the real truth lies, the Daily Mail quotes the ultimate source of all truth. Yes, who? The World Health Organization, who has said, quote, there is currently no proof. As if that somehow still made any difference concerning hydroxychloroquine. Now, there's no proof that fabric masks have any medical benefit whatsoever. And yeah, here's what they miss, among about 1,000 other contradictions. There's no proof that wearing an idiotic face diaper does anything except decrease your own immune system function, decrease your oxygen content, increase the CO2 in your bloodstream, and mark you as a Kool-Aid drinker. You know, the kind of person who might believe crap, not news. Well, all right, I guess, like it or not, that brings us here. As you may recall, Big Brother's public-private partners, the big tech socialist CEOs, were all in Washington on Wednesday, at least virtually, to continue lying and spreading their smoke screens. So let's try to talk about as much of that as we can stand. Quite honestly, there wasn't a whole lot that we haven't heard before, over and over again. Facebook censors about 90% of the so-called hate speech before it's allowed to circulate, says a piece from NewsWars, according to their CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, before Congress at Wednesday's big tech hearing. And he was responding, get this, to pressure from socialist Democrats to submit to their advertiser boycott. In other words, folks, these communists are concerned that Big Brother's public-private partners aren't going far enough to censor things they don't want people to hear. Jamie Raskin, socialist of Maryland, tried to pressure Facebook to, quote, join the civil rights movement by submitting to the demands of the Stop Hate for Profit campaign. A boycott accusing Too Facebook of tolerating, quote, widespread hate on their platform because they haven't yet banned all of the Bible believers, constitutionalists, libertarians, and conservatives yet. Responded Zuckerberg, we're able to proactively identify 89% of the hate speech that we take down before, I think, it's even seen by other people. And the piece goes on to note that Too Facebook has been under increasing pressure since the 2016 election because they couldn't stop Hitler's defeat. And Raskin repeated those accusations that it was Too Facebook that basically cost Hitler the election. You gotta love this statement too. He added, quote, we routinely collaborate with law enforcement and intelligence agencies and are able to sometimes identify threats coming from other countries before governments are even able to. Well, obviously, folks, that doesn't include Russia, Russia, Russia. In response to a question from Florida Representative Greg Stubbe, however, Pichai did say that if the CDC says jump when it comes to censoring things, they will say how high. The major fireworks of the day came from the mask idiocy front. Says Fox News' coverage, Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio had a fiery clash with his Democratic colleagues at Wednesday's congressional hearing with the socialist media tech giants. Jordan grilled Alphabet CEO Sundar Pichai over Google's search engine bias against conservatives and asked whether or not Pichai could commit that Gulag will not interfere in the upcoming election to the benefit of senile, creepy old quid pro Joe Biden. And notably, the CEO of Gulag simply refused to give Jordan a straight yes or no answer. Congressman Jordan asked Sundar Pichai several times if he can assure the American people that Google won't tailor its features to help Joe Biden win the election, and each time Pichai simply went into his carefully crafted talking points in an effort to make the company that's basically a subsidiary of communist China on American soil appear neutral. Which, as Tucker Carlson, among others, has reported, and Gulag executives have been caught on tape admitting, and in emails, was exactly their plan during the 2016 election on behalf of Hillary Clinton. But that turned out to be just the beginning of the fireworks. After the grilling by Jordan, Representative Sick Mary Gay Scanlon, socialist from Pennsylvania, appeared to dismiss Jordan's concerns by calling them, say it with me folks, fringe conspiracy theories. Mr. Chairman, he responded, we have the email, referring to that email written by a Gulag staffer that suggested the tech giant not only intended but did aid Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016, whereupon the committee chairman, David Cicilline of Rhode Island, scolded Jordan for daring to interrupt Scanlon's questioning. And then, yeah, you heard it, Shrieker of Maryland, Jamie Raskin, joined in by ordering the Ohio congressman to put your mask on! And I think in this context, what that really means is people can understand you, and we really don't like that. Several congressmen took the time to point out how Gulag was censoring search results from various conservative websites, and when they couldn't get a straight answer, Florida Representative Greg Stubbe demanded that Pichai give him an explanation of what they're doing within 2 weeks. After all of that, we finally have this, courtesy of the Trump White House, which has now implemented that executive order that was promised over the last couple of days concerning online censorship, and it's intended to prevent the socialist media tech giants from altering users' free speech by demanding some transparency of the moderation practice. The White House said on Monday the Department of Commerce, as directed by President Donald J. Trump's executive order on preventing online censorship, filed a petition to clarify the scope of Section 230 of the 1996 Communications Decency Act, requesting that the FCC clarify that Section 230 does not permit so-called social media companies that alter or editorialize user speech to escape civil liability. And it also requests that the FCC clarify when an online platform curates content in, quote, good faith, and requests transparency requirements on those moderation practices, similar to those imposed on broadband services under Title I of the same Communications Act. President Trump, it says, will continue to fight back against unfair, un-American, and politically biased censorship of America online. And it's more than about time. We'll be right back.
my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free, you can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea, you can't take the sky from me.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. This is your host, Mark Call, and let's start this one off with a look back, more or less chronologically. And I can't help but admit, folks, that it's more than a bit fascinating, if certainly unsettling, to watch a bunch of leftist nutcases who never did really believe in the right to keep and bear arms, much less learn how to handle firearms safely as a child, suddenly decide that if they get to do it, since there's a Bolshevik revolution in process, and of course, as their hero Mao Zedong once put it, all political power flows from the barrel of a gun, it must be politically correct, even if some of them manage to kill themselves in the process. And we don't just have one or two stories on that front to kick things off today. It's almost like the nutcases are killing themselves faster than the bogus rise in coronavirus deaths. And it's particularly amusing to see how the leftist anti-gun United Kingdom Daily Mail spins the headline. Black militia member accidentally shoots his comrades during a face-off with the booga 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 far-right 3%ers in Louisville, Kentucky, it says, as their fearless leader demands the truth about Breonna Taylor's death in 4 weeks, or we will burn this motherfucker down. That is, of course, if they don't kill themselves first in the process. On Saturday, 3 people were injured, it begins, in downtown Louisville when a member of an armed black militia group carrying semi-automatic weapons, I would say carelessly carrying them, accidentally discharged a firearm as they marched to a demonstration. No, even though they reported it previously, it wasn't the result of an argument between the far-left group and a bunch of Second Amendment supporters gathered nearby, and it's now been confirmed that a member of the Atlanta-based Not F***ing Around Coalition, NFAC, accidentally fired on other members of the same group as they assembled in Baxter Park. In other words, folks, they were, in fact, effing around, and that got several of them shot. Now, true to form, folks, this left-leaning publication doesn't actually ever get around to saying exactly how it was that the not-effing-around coalition managed to shoot one of their own accidentally. But it's easy to imagine none of them have ever heard the 3 basic rules of firearm safety. Why would I not be surprised to hear somebody say that understanding basic rules of firearms handling must mark you as some kind of a racist? By the way, that does seem to be the other main element of the piece here. Not once does the far-left group get called far-left by the at least middling far-left Daily Mail, but the Second Amendment supporting 3%ers get called far-right not only 3 separate times, but twice in the first 3 paragraphs, to make the point. On the south side of Denver, Colorado over the weekend in Aurora, a car dared to drive through a crowd of protesters, actually out on the I-225 interstate, and this time, a protester who was trying to kill the driver and the occupants of that car, how dare they, managed to shoot other so-called protesters as well. At least 2 of the so-called peaceful protesters were hit or grazed by bullets as a fellow protester tried to shoot the driver. There were multiple gunshots on the car. A video later showed that at least 1 tire appeared to have been shot out, but the people inside the car did not appear to be injured as they hightailed it out of there. The Aurora PD said that at least 1 of the peaceful protesters was transported to the hospital and is in stable condition. And then there's this, also from over the weekend. Not only arguably inevitable, but evidently where the protests have been headed all along, Garrett Foster, age 28, an armed BLM protester carrying an AK-47, was shot dead in Austin Saturday evening after he confronted the driver of a car who had dared to drive his vehicle toward the 100-strong crowd of protesters marching in the city center. After evidently threatening the driver through the window, Foster was shot 3 times by the man who then fled the scene. Later turned himself in to Austin police, and he's finally been released from custody after pleading, hey, say it with me, folks, self-defense. True to form, the leftist Daily Mail coverage focuses mostly on the poor bereaved fiancé and all the people that are now carrying signs saying, justice for Garrett. In his coverage, radio host Hal Turner reports that just prior to his demise, the BLM protester Garrett Foster gave an interview on camera saying that, quote, people who hate us are, quote, too big of pussies to actually do anything about it, unquote. And as Turner notes, the incident was captured on Facebook Live, and it appears that the crowd was blocking traffic and possibly surrounding the car prior to the shooting. And just maybe the so-called protester threatened the wrong guy. Which kind of leads your host to point to the real trouble here, folks. Anytime you have mobs, night after night after night, going out and either peacefully protesting or said to be peacefully protesting, while buildings get burned down and businesses get destroyed, and people can no longer travel to where they're trying to go, much less make a living, tensions tend to flare. Add in a bunch of idiocy like mask mandates, and you might as well pour gasoline on a fire, especially when people are accosted by a mob. So I'll suggest that the tinderbox has already been primed, and it looks like, finally at least, the far left and their deep state provocateurs have managed to get some sparks going, too. But the insanity certainly isn't confined to people being shot while confronting cars on the interstate with what the press would otherwise call a dreaded assault rifle. The mask cult is also still out there, shrieking and posturing like there is no tomorrow, and if they get their way, there won't be. Let's start with a nutcase in New Mexico, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, who insists that she's making coronavirus stay-at-home decisions, Achtung, you will or else, with her constituents' health in mind, first of all.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
As Town Hall quotes the wannabe tyrant in a video statement, New Mexicans are traveling out of state. You're not adhering to and you're not supposed to be going out. Why are you going out of state? Well, maybe there's at least one obvious answer to that. But this little wannabe Fuhrer was just getting rolling. I can see you at the airports. I can see you on Facebook. Our modelers and folks who look at that aggregate data, we know about it, she warned. And said that all these out-of-state travelers are being unfair to New Mexico's economy. I guess that means they intend to destroy it completely, and how dare they go elsewhere before that. All the while, says Town Hall, she threateningly pointed at the camera. I wish I had more time for this next story, but it's really just a bit of comic relief anyway, from the politically correct UK Daily Mail. Six-time Formula One champion Lewis Hamilton, age 35, shared a video by content creator King Bach on his Instagram feed, not once but twice, and he dared, can you believe it, to impugn the character of the sainted world emperor Bill Gates via a meme concerning his mandatory vaccine plans, where he says, I remember when I told my first lie. And while that's funny, it's really not the point. Having evidently gotten the message and groveling for forgiveness, they show a picture of Lee Hamilton not only properly chastened and wearing his facial petri dish, but also a t-shirt that says, Black Lives Matter. He sucked up good and hard and noted that he has lots of respect for the charity work of the wonderful Bill Gates, and, quote, I also want to be clear that I am not against the vaccine, and no doubt it will be important in the fight against coronavirus, and I'm hopeful for its development to save lives. Hey, folks, look up sycophant in the dictionary. See his picture. From there, let's take a look at just how successful the COVID-1984 pandemic has been at doing precisely what it's intended to do, which is utterly destroy not only the U.S. economy, but take down the entire world. And a whole lot of data that came out this week already demonstrates the fruit of that. The U.S. second quarter GDP, says the summary from Zero Hedge, has crashed by a record 32.9%. And that's far worse than any quarter during the Great Depression. And as a matter of fact, it comes fairly close to matching that entire depression as a whole. The biggest question, says Tyler Durden, that we had prior to today's unprecedented GDP drop was, well, just how do we show it on a chart without making all the previous drops look like a flat line? And they note that it's five times bigger than the first quarter's almost record drop of 6.9%. Some more details. The second quarter decrease in real GDP reflects a decrease in consumer spending, exports, inventory investment, business investment, and housing investment, some of which were partly offset by, oh, you guessed it, government spending. That said, though, the biggest contributor to the overall drop was the crash in consumption, and that decrease in consumer spending reflected decreases in services. And it was led by healthcare services, as well as goods, led by clothing and, of course, footwear. Who needs to walk much if you're not allowed to go outside? The real question, though, concludes Zero Hedge, is what happens next, and whether or not the obviously pretty well bogus at this point V-shaped recovery will ever appear. Alas, as even the Fed is now finally admitting, the high-frequency data seems to indicate that the U.S. economy peaked, if you can call it that, in late June, and is once again rolling over. By the way, personal consumption was down over 25%, making up the lion's share of that huge GDP drop, and I can't help but think that about the only thing that people are buying more of are face diapers. But when it comes to downright dismal economic news, we got a whole bunch of it. Continuing jobless claims, says a related piece, spike as almost 50% of the jobs already lost, quote, may be gone permanently. Initial jobless claims, begins Tyler Durden for Zero Hedge, were above a million last week for the 19th straight week. And remember when a million jobs was a record? And rose for the second week in a row. But even continuing jobless claims have greatly disappointed, rising for the first time now in 8 weeks, up from 16.15 million to just over 17. And a total of over 54 million Americans have now applied for jobless benefits for the first time since the pandemic lockdowns began. And that amounts, by the way, to 330 layoffs for every even claimed COVID-1984 death in America with a K. And that's massively more than the 22.1 million that were laid off during the so-called Great Financial Crisis. Writes Michael Snyder for his own Economic Collapse blog, and also included here by Zero Hedge. Below the surface of the numbers, things may be even worse. Because while millions of Americans were losing their jobs at the beginning of the pandemic, we were told not to worry. The lockdowns are just temporary. Well, now, folks, they're the new normal. And until you get your vaccine, you're going to have to wear your face diaper and pretend you're a good little slave until you're willing to bend over and take one for Big Brother. Now we see that virtually all of those workers aren't going to go back to their jobs once the temporary lockdowns ended. And he, too, refers to that USA Today article, citing a brand new survey suggesting that about 47% of all those unemployed workers believe they're going to stay that way. And this is not only the worst unemployment crisis since the Great Depression, arguably, it's the worst in history. Would you believe, he continues, that consumer confidence has fallen again in July? It's now much lower than it was in June. Although maybe, folks, it's just a whole bunch of people suffering from hypoxia and hypercapnia. Although, come to think of it, your host has seen more and more reports, the Waste Stream won't cover them, they call them anecdotal, of people suffering from all kinds of medical issues associated with wearing their Petri dish rebreather for hour after hour, sometimes 40 or more hours a week. Now, sore throats, sinus infections, and headaches people are used to. But how about salivary duct infections and all kinds of other mouth and nose related issues? Yuck. And when it comes to people's immune systems being suppressed by doing that stupid thing to their mouth and nose, you can probably guess what's going to happen to all kinds of other infection rates over the next couple of months. And if you can follow all of that through, you can see where the economy is headed too. Concludes Michael Snyder, it just doesn't look like any sort of a recovery is happening. Instead, it appears we're sliding into the next chapter, second wave, if you will, of the new, greater economic depression. Because while in June 19% of all small U.S. businesses were closed, that number is now up to almost 25%. You can't really call that progress. With each day, more companies are announcing layoffs, and every laid-off worker is another one that doesn't have a paycheck to spend. And no, while Big Brother will probably pass another bailout, why, just look at how successful the first one was. The only thing you can count on from that front is inflation, probably hyperinflation. Because if you could print your way to prosperity, as Snyder notes, Venezuela and Zimbabwe would be among the wealthiest nations on the planet today. Because after all, almost everyone in Venezuela is a millionaire one way or another. They're just living in extreme poverty as a result. And meanwhile, we've got a lot of communist mayors and governors trying to turn the likes of Minneapolis, Portland, Seattle, Chicago, New York, and L.A. into a bunch of new Caracases. Meanwhile, in Washington, both wings of that same evil bird of prey are flapping in unison to push the United States over the cliff with the next Big Brother bailout debt bender, as hypoxic Congress critters continue to try to out-bribe one another. On Monday, for example, rhinos in the Senate introduced what they laughably call the Health Economic Assistance Liability Protection and Schools, or HEALS Act. Who comes up with this stuff? And worse still, who believes it? What they're calling the next round of pandemic relief. I guess you could say the only relief in here is what they're doing all over the Constitution. And it's, of course, a lot like the previous bailout, the CARES Act. But what's been added, and is actually drawing some Republican fire, is the inclusion of almost $2 billion to construct a new headquarters for one of the sleaziest three-letter agencies on the planet, the Federal Bunglers of Investigation. No pork there. Well, wait a minute. Who are we kidding? And yeah, in case you're curious, the bill does include another $1,200 in funny money, which will clearly be worth a lot less to everybody than the first $1,200 was. There's more for the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP, another public-private partnership that allegedly encourages business to retain workers, and you can see how effective that's been when you look at the jobless numbers. Although when it comes to some people buying bitcoins with the money and binging in Vegas, maybe you could say it was a success. At least Vegas does. Their casinos are certainly doing better than their churches anyway. And the new bill is also said to fix the loophole that sent around $1 billion to dead people. Even some dead kitties. Anybody buying that? Well, I guess any time you print up a fresh few $1 trillion, there's bound to be some slop. No wonder the pigs are lining up at the trough. Speaking of which, there's this piece from Zero Hedge. In what they call an unprecedented move, Congress has proposed taxpayer-funded bailouts of, wait, yes, which boondoggle will be next? This time it's the $550 billion CMBS, or Commercial Mortgage-Backed Securities industry. And what? You say you don't own a tranche of that? If you're going to go with a bailout, they note, why not go all the way? 2 months after we reported that the state of California has tried to turn centuries of finance on its head by allowing businesses to walk away from commercial leases, in other words, to make commercial debt non-recourse, a move the California Business Properties Association said could cause a financial collapse. Gee, do you think? Attempts to bail out commercial lenders have reached the federal level, and what else is new, with the Wall Street Journal now reporting that lawmakers have introduced a bill to provide cash to struggling hotels and shopping centers that just weren't able to pause mortgage payments like everybody else did after the coronavirus, more properly, folks, the response by the idiots to the coronavirus, shut down the entire U.S. economy. The bill would set up a government-backed funding vehicle which companies could tap to stay current on their mortgages. Why, hey, it's just another good old-fashioned can-kicking. Allegedly, to help those who borrowed over $500 trillion on the CMBS market, in which mortgages are repackaged, sliced and diced, into bonds and sold to Wall Street. But what it really represents, say the economists, is a bailout of the only group of borrowers that so far had not found access to the Fed's various generous rescue facilities. And that's where the commie Congress comes in. Yes, it's true, the commercial real estate market is imploding, and as we reported, says Zero Hedge, at the start of the month, some 10% of loans in commercial-backed mortgage securities were at least 30 days or more delinquent by the end of June. That includes more than 25% of the entire hotel industry. Here's at least one of the many problems with this latest socialist measure. Not only are taxpayers ultimately on the hook via the various Fed, Treasury, and JVs that will find these programs, but the new money will be, by default, junior to existing insolvent debt. Now, as the Wall Street Journal explains, that means that many of the borrowers have provisions in their initial loan documents that forbid them from taking on more debt without additional approval from those that hold the paper. The proposed facility, though, would instead structure the cash infusions as preferred equity, which isn't subject to those debt restrictions. In other words, it means the new capital is junior to the old debt, and that means that when there's another economic downturn, you can count on it, folks, taxpayer funds will get wiped out first, and why are we surprised? And by the way, the debt that was already unpayable to begin with will still remain on the books. Can you see where this ends? If not, you probably belong in Congress. And by the way, this is where your host steps in and notes, this is why this particular Great Depression is going to put all the other little blips in the past to shame. Because once upon a time, the purpose of a recession, and if it got too bad, a depression, was to clear out unpayable debt. Basically, the giant reset. And properties that were distressed would be sold. Perhaps at pennies on the dollar, people would buy them and then be able to actually run a profitable business as a result. What's being done today is Big Brother stepping in to make sure that that doesn't happen. The distressed properties stay distressed. The sufficiently well-connected, of course, manage to buy some of the primo ones and let the rest go to rot. Ultimately, they don't get fixed up. They get run down, and they turn into what Cuomo and de Blasio are doing to New York and the other socialists are doing to the left coast. This is going to result, folks, in blight like the United States has never seen before. Except maybe in San Francisco, then Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, and, of course, Chicago. Zero Hedge summarizes it this way. If some in the industry have warned that an attempt to rescue the CMBS market would disproportionately benefit a handful of large real estate owners rather than small business owners, it's because they're precisely right. Roughly 80% of CMBS debt is held by a handful of funds who will be the ultimate beneficiaries of this unprecedented bailout. Funds which have spent a whole lot of money lobbying the sponsors of this bogus bill. None of this will be revealed, they continue, and instead the talking points will focus on reaching the dumbest common denominator. One of the sponsors, Van Taylor, said the legislation is focused on what else, folks? Jobs. What he didn't say is that each job that is saved will end up getting lost just a few months later, and meanwhile it will cost millions of dollars per job just to make sure that the billionaires who hold that CMBS debt come out smelling like a rose. And finally, they say, at this point, since there's money being vomited out of helicopters like it was printed on paper, and the U.S. deficit is exploding to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars per month, who really gives a you-know-what if just a few more billionaires are bailed out by taxpayers? I mean, really, along with keeping a boot on the neck of Big Brother's slave population, isn't that the point of this whole COVID-1984 plandemic? I guess I do have to work this in before the music comes up. Not because William Barr doesn't have a sordid deep state past, but perhaps more importantly because it shows just how far down the rat hole Congress has gone, and they're simply so much worse. The testimony of Attorney General William Barr in front of the far-left House Judiciary Committee was, as the Daily Caller's Chuck Ross put it yesterday, and I'm quoting, an unmitigated shit show. And you know what, folks? Having watched a bit of it, I actually think he was too kind. Says the Zero Hedge summary, the session consisted of Democrat lawmakers shouting hyperbolic questions at the AG, then cutting him off as soon as he began to respond. At one point he said, quote, this is a hearing. I thought I was the one who was supposed to be heard, unquote. It got so bad that Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio slammed the Democrats on the committee, saying, quote, I don't think we've ever had a hearing where the witness wasn't allowed to respond to points made, questions asked, and attacks made, not just in this hearing, not just in this committee, but in every committee I've been on. And he added, particularly when you think about the fact that we have here the Attorney General of the United States. He said he wanted the Attorney General to be able to have enough time to respond to accusations and questions asked him, and then he added, you guys cut him off, to which the disgusting Jerry Nadler, committee chairman, said, the gentleman does not have the time. Replied Jordan, I don't want the time. I just want the Attorney General to have enough time. What you want is irrelevant, said Nadler. And this is the same guy that, after 3 hours of testimony, even refused to allow the Attorney General a five-minute break to go to the potty room, for crying out loud. Causing the Attorney General to later refer to that scumbag as, and I quote, a real class act. While Barr managed to keep his cool throughout most of the theatrics, says the summary here, there did come a point during one particularly heated exchange where he'd had enough. After being reminded that he was, quote, under penalty of perjury by so-called Representative Joe Neguse of Colorado, Barr responded, I'm going to answer the damn question. Joe Hoff, for the Gateway Pundit, said there was only one question during the entire hearing that they really wanted to hear an answer to. It was the very last question in a full five-hour slugfest, and they had hoped to beat him down sufficiently beforehand that he'd cave. They spent hours berating him, slandering him, and calling him names. Obviously, they weren't after the truth, but they were very angry that Barr has a criminal investigation in place led by U.S. Attorney John Durham related to the actions surrounding the attempted coup, the fraudulent Russia so-called investigation led by ringleader Obama and his gangs in the Just Us and Intel communities. And this is the same gang, he notes, that attempted to remove the president from office knowing their entire case was a fraud. They've been caught. Will they ever be prosecuted? And more particularly, the big question was, will Barr allow the Durham report to be released between now and the election? As Hoff puts it, they turned to mean, obnoxious, and disrespectful so-called Representative Mukarse Powell, who first labeled the president and the attorney general as murderers and suggested they were responsible for the coronavirus deaths all across the nation. And unlike New York's Cuomo, neither one of them contaminated a single old folks home with a COVID case. Whereupon this particular scurrilous rat said, quote, under oath, do you commit not to releasing any report by Mr. Durham before the November election? And the response? No. Yeah, folks, cue the stuck pigs. Finally, even the left-leaning Slate had to admit that the Democrats blew it. Quote, throughout the day, when Democratic representatives questioned Barr about specific allegations of abuse of power, they either quickly stepped over their own lines of questioning or interrupted Barr. This tactic may have been effective in preventing Barr from filibustering, but it did nothing to get any answers whatsoever from him. Which makes the point, folks. The goal is no longer even remotely about getting answers to real problems. It's certainly not about the truth or protecting people's health or, for crying out loud, their well-being. It's not about civility or even human decency. It's about destruction, complete and total. It's about subjugation. It's about revolution, insurrection in other words, and it's about control. And it's about time the American people wake up to it and do something before they're not only muzzled, but bound, chained, and thrown on the train. It's past time to wake up.